I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
On the line with us to take a look at the Combine, the senior draft analyst for the Draft Network, the host of the Locked On NFL Draft podcast, John Ledger joins us. John, it's John Murphy and Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Are you still in Indy?
I am, yes. I'm in Indy. I fly out this evening in a couple hours here.
I feel like Steve and I skipped class early because we got out of there Friday. And there's a lot that goes on over the weekend, including the on-field workouts. What did we miss? What was the highlight of the weekend, and even including Monday, so far at the Combine, John?
Yeah, it is. It's funny, though. It clears out pretty good. I think I've been in my third year coming here, and yesterday was as quiet as I'd seen it on a Sunday. I mean, there was just hardly any media at all at the defensive backs interview, open interview session. So it is funny. It clears out quickly over the weekend. But, yeah, the edge rushers, I mean, I think – a couple guys really tested well and kind of confirmed their status as top guys. I think Montez Sweat, certainly one of those guys. I thought there were concerns on tape with his bend and flexibility, but I think in the combine drills, at least, you could see that he'd been working on some things, or at least in the testing portion, he did very well. I think on tape, those concerns are still there, but you kind of hope that the athletic profile is there to be better at the next level than he was in college in that area. So he's one to take note of. Brian Burns from Florida State. People thought he was lighter, and he put on a bunch of weight, still maintained his elite athleticism. He tested at a very, very high level all the way around. He looked unbelievable in the positional workouts, just so smooth and fluid, dropping into coverage. He might be better than some of the defensive backs working out today. Wow. In coverage. So he really has the movement skills the teams are going to fall in love with. He's a hard worker, and I think teams will like that as well. Character checked down with guys like he and Montez Sweat. And then on the flip side, Ja'Kai Polite from Florida did himself no favors. There's some weird interview questions during his podium session. Sounded like he bristled at teams, kind of criticizing his play during one-on-one sessions with teams, interviews with teams, which is something every one of these players goes through, and he really kind of seemed like a little sensitive to it, and then proceeded to test poorly. He honestly looked sloppy in his frame, looked like he put on some bad weight quickly to get up to 258, and then he bowed out with a quote-unquote injury from the combine after he jumped 32 inches and ran a 4.83. So it was not a great day for Ja'Kai Polite at all. I think we can safely say that with everything coupled together, plus kind of things I've been hearing before we got to Indy, that he probably is out of first-round consideration. Wow. The question will be how far he falls into the second round or even further.
A question for you about the edge rushers, and the Bills, of course, in need of some pass rush help. How many of the group that you've seen at the combine belong somewhere in the top 10, the Bills sitting there at number 9? Are there more than one or two that would be top 10, legitimate top 10 picks?
Yeah, I think you're looking at a possibility where quite a few of them could be in that range, to be honest. I mean, both obviously one. Josh Allen is for sure going to go there. I think Brian Burns and Montez Sweat could find their way into that range as well. I mean, there's certainly a couple teams that could need one. You mentioned Buffalo, obviously. Detroit is another one that could need an edge rusher. The Giants could potentially as well. Even Tampa Bay, that decision could be something with them letting go of Vinnie Curry and not having a guy opposite Jason Pierre-Paul they can really trust. So there are just so many teams. Then you get into the top. I mean, the 49ers need one. The Jets need one. The Raiders certainly need one. That's arguably their biggest need. So it would not surprise me, as crazy as it sounds, to see four of those guys end up going in the top 10 just because it is such a valuable position. And with the quarterback class being down and not that many teams even needing a quarterback, I think that changes the landscape of the draft compared to how it typically looks.
How is it possible that these players kind of sneak in up on our consciousness? And I know that we sent John Murphy to the Senior Bowl, and that's the first time we had heard of Montez Sweat. But he seems to be rising and rising and rising. He seems like he's elected captain at the Senior Bowl. Why do some of these guys slip through the cracks until you see him at the combine? Is there just no production in college?
Well, with Sweat, there was. I mean, two straight years he's been a double-digit sack guy in the SEC. So he's had the production. He's had the numbers. And, before the season started, I kind of wrote about him. It was like, I think this guy could be a first-rounder. I really think if he puts on some weight and maintains some of that athleticism and flexibility, I think he can be a first-rounder. Then he put on a bunch of weight. He got up, 15, 20 pounds up to 260, which is what he checked in here. He looks unbelievable on the hoof. But I watched his tape this past season. I'm like, I'm not sure he maintained that athleticism, you know, when he added the weight. And that's, you know, again, we go back to Jakai Polite. It looks like he put on the weight super fast, but he obviously couldn't maintain his athleticism during testing here. But Sweat showed that he could. And so I have to go back to the tape and look. I have a second-round grade on him right now. I know the NFL sounds like he's higher on him than I am. I think there's some talent there for sure. But at the end of the day, I think that, you know, the tape does kind of matter most to me. I've seen guys test really well and go back to their tape and, you know, still seeing issues. Some guys really respond well to training, but it doesn't necessarily translate over to the field. You know, you think of Jordan Willis from Kansas State a couple years ago. I think there's some similarities between he and Sweat on tape. Jordan Willis did unbelievable at the combine. Then you get to the NFL, and he's done nothing really for two seasons. Cincinnati, he's really, really struggled. So I think that's where you got to go back to with a guy like Sweat. Still a good player, a better player than Willis coming out, I think. He's more polished all the way around. But at the same time, you know, I think that there's some limitations there to consider. But for some guys, it definitely is production. Some guys didn't get the chance to, you know, you remember George Kittle a couple of years ago. He went in the fifth round, and, you know, I think that in college he had like 40-something total catches his whole entire career at Iowa, and he was this great athlete with great receiving ability, and they just didn't use him. They just didn't throw the ball to him. And so now he's getting that chance, and he's getting the opportunity to show what he can really do, and he's one of the best tight ends in the league. So I think you have to weigh all of that when you go to the combine and go to an event like this, because you are looking for those athletic outliers. Go back to their tape, were they misused or were they, did they just not have talent, and then kind of make a decision on their stock from there.
We're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with John Ledyard. He is senior draft analyst for the Draft Network. What about interior defensive line help? Quinnen Williams opened a lot of eyes with his combine, and some people believe that he could be the number one overall pick. What do you think, John?
Yeah, Quinnen Williams is a dominant football player. You can definitely make the argument because of Nick Bosa's, you know, injury history, even though there aren't super serious injuries, you can definitely make the argument that Quinnen Williams is the safest player in this year's class. It just really feels like no one is talking about Nick Bosa at all. He was good yesterday at the combine. He wasn't unreal or anything, but he's clearly the best. I mean, on tape, his tape is unbelievable. He's on the field. But because of his injury history, I mean, you can make the argument for sure Quinnen Williams is the best player in the class. I mean, last year he was the best player in college football, in my opinion. So, I mean, he's just completely dominant on tape. Dominant athletic profile. He came in bigger than people thought as well, and still maintained that athleticism. I mean, this guy just, he's incredibly physical and incredibly dominant on tape. Almost every matchup that he went up against, I mean, he was just completely unblockable. So, I mean, he's going to be an absolute star. You know, I think that people look at other positions kind of for the sex appeal of the draft, but I mean, to be honest, like, Quinnen Williams is going to be an absolute monster for whoever drafts him. And if you look at the top of the draft, he could honestly slide. I mean, it's not out of the question he could be there for Buffalo at 9. It really isn't. I mean, you look at the top, you know, Arizona, for example, if they stay at number 1, we kind of know the considerations that are facing them. They could take Quinnen Williams there, but at the end of the day, it feels unlikely. A defensive tackle goes first overall. I mean, you got the 49ers at number 2. They really have way bigger need at edge rusher than they do on the interior. They already have DeForest Buckner. They just brought back Eric Armstead for another year, so the need isn't really there. I think with the Jets, you see what happens with Leonard Williams, but right now, they have way bigger needs at edge rusher and offensive tackle. The Raiders drafted P.J. Hall in the second round last year, Maurice Hurst in the fifth round. Eddie Vanderdoes comes back from injury, so he could slide past them. The Bucs sound like they're bringing back Gerald McCoy. You just get down and down the list. I mean, the Giants love B.J. Hill and their guys they have, so it just feels like defensive tackle could slide, and it could be a guy that's there for Buffalo in the end of the top 10. So
I'd take him.
I definitely think it's a consideration.
I'd take
him. Yeah, I agree with you, and I think if you can – you know, there is something to be said for it being a copycat lead, and with the Rams getting to the Super Bowl with two dominant defensive tackles and some okay edge rushers, might be the recipe for the Buffalo Bills going forward if they can get a guy like Quinnen Williams.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, you can get pressure lots of different ways, and there's a lot of thought in the league that the interior defensive line pressure is even more effective than edge rusher. I know studies don't really show that right now, and I would say that edge production and pressure is more valuable to the defense. But still, I mean, we're talking about the ability to get to the quarterback. After having a good quarterback, that's the second most thing for an NFL team to figure out. So yeah. I think that Quinnen Williams helps to do that. I don't know exactly what team is going to value enough given the current roster setup of the teams ahead of the Bills right now. But I really think that it could be a slide for him. And he's a way better player than Leonard Williams was on tape. And you remember when Leonard Williams played at 6? And people thought he was going to go number 1 or be the best player in the draft, and he slid down to number 6. So, I mean, I don't think a slide like that for Quinnen Williams is out of the question, given the assortment of teams that are above Buffalo in the top of the draft. But if it does, I mean, there shouldn't be any hesitation. I mean, he is an elite player in a class that doesn't have a ton of elite players, and I think that his tape reflects that, his testing reflects that, and I think he'll absolutely be dominant in the NFL.
John Ledyard from the Draft Network on the line with us. John, help me out with this. A great combine overall, great workout Saturday for DK Metcalf and everybody in Buffalo in need of a wide receiver is ready to go. Sign him today. My question is, and I asked it to my partner here today, where's the production? I know he was hurt, but the production in college doesn't match the combine workout numbers. And to me, I'm not saying it, I said this to Steve here, I'm not saying it's a red flag, but I would use the next 7 weeks to look into that to see why those spectacular combine results don't match up with the kind of production you might expect to get from him.
Yeah, well, I think one of the big things to look at with DK Metcalf is his age. I mean, he's only a redshirt sophomore. So you're talking about a guy who has barely had time to really get on the field and see the field very much in college. And so I think, honestly, you know, when you look at what he did as a redshirt freshman, pushing Van Jefferson kind of out of the lineup as the season went on, who is a very good player. I mean, you remember, he was at Ole Miss with DeMarcus Lodge, A.J. Brown, Van Jefferson. All those guys are going to get drafted. Brown and Jefferson maybe have a chance to be top 100 guys. Lodge could be early day three type of guy. I mean, this is a group of receivers that was unbelievable. This wasn't just any college team around the country. Yet still, Metcalf, as raw as he is, comes in as a redshirt freshman and is pushing a well-respected guy who transferred to Florida, was their best receiver this past season. He's pushing him out of the lineup at that point in time. So, you know, I think, honestly, when you're looking at it and you're saying, you know, why didn't DK Metcalf produce? You have to remember, he's only a redshirt sophomore. Plus, this season, he actually was having better yards per catch than A.J. Brown. He had more touchdowns than A.J. Brown. He had more production on way less targets and less catches than A.J. Brown did when he came out of the lineup. I think he was averaging like something like 20 yards a catch. The guy just was dominant whenever they threw him the ball. Plus, also keep this in mind. In Ole Miss's offense, everything ran through A.J. Brown. I've heard that from Jordan Tiamu, from the coaching staff there, from Dawson Knox, who I had him on the podcast the other day. You know, the offense ran largely through A.J. Brown, targeted him a ton. And so he was getting a ton of that production almost in a force-fed capacity. Metcalf was only allowed to run like three routes in that offense. So, you know, if a quarterback knew what he was going to run before the snap, which they often did, that's a big reason why Phil Longo is no longer there, he was easier to guard in that capacity. So because of that, it made him, when they faced teams like Alabama, I know he caught the first play from scrimmage for a big touchdown, was quiet after that. Same thing with LSU. Those better defenses knew exactly what routes they were going to run, made it way harder to get open. In the NFL, he's going to get the full route tree. Teams are going to move him around. There's going to be a lot harder to guard him. And so I think you have to buy in. I mean, like, I just think with Metcalf, the athletic measurables, his work ethic, his teammates rave about him, you know, the character and everything. I mean, yes, like, he's a little bit raw and he needs a little bit of work in terms of development. But, I mean, if you can't take a chance on that guy, the NFL is it's a risky league, and he's generally a safe risk, if you can call it that. So I just think the profile's too good to pass up.
You sound like you're sold. You're sold on him.
I do. I like him a lot. I think he's very good. You know, I can see the path for him to struggle a little bit because of his rawness. But I really think all the traits are there for him to be a dominant player in the NFL. And now it's up to the league. They have a responsibility with some players like this with special feelings to get them the rest of the way in terms of their development.
Well, one of the things I got to ask you about, too, is that the quarterbacks threw yesterday, and I was going to ask you, was there any surprises other than the fact that Kyler Murray was a no-show? Did any of the quarterbacks help or hurt themselves significantly?
I don't think anybody helped themselves, really, to be honest. I mean, I guess Ryan Finley was okay, but I think the NFL's dug in on him on day three, so there's just kind of a limit to how much he can help himself. I mean, Haskins looked like the best guy out on the field. He still wasn't great or amazing or anything like that. You can still see some of the mechanical concerns that have teams rattle a little bit with selecting him. But I mean, I think we're pretty clear at the top for the quarterback group, to be honest. And I think Murray and Haskins are going to be the first two off the board, and Locke will come off to the team that misses out on those two that needs a quarterback. So, I mean, I think it's kind of clear how the top is going to shake out. I just think if I say one thing, it's that Daniel Jones really, I mean, he had opportunity at the Senior Bowl, and I know he won Senior Bowl MVP for the game, but he was brutal in the days of practice. There, he threw more picks in practice than any of the other quarterbacks did. Just too many mistakes in that those situations. Even in the game, I mean, he won MVP by default. There was no other option, and he had a good stat because he threw a deep ball. His receiver went up and got that was off target. So, I mean, there just has been very little that Daniel Jones has done to actually help his stock in a tangible way on the field. So I think if anybody's been hurt by the pre-draft process, it's him. I think there was first-round talk. There was top 15 talk. I just think that's probably not going to end up happening, and we're going to see him more probably sometime on day two would be my guess. So that's my one takeaway from the quarterbacks. Other than that, I think the group pretty much has stood pat kind of where they were at coming into the event.
John Ledyard, our guest. Hey, John, there's local interest here in Buffalo in the UB Bulls product, Tyree Jackson. Is he still, even after the combine and after, you know, his impressive measurables, is he still a day three quarterback prospect in the draft, what do you think?
Honestly, he could be, end up sneaking into day two. They're just or not. I mean, every step of the way, I wouldn't say that he's wowed by any stretch of the imagination, but kind of every step of the way has just been this, you, everyone else struggling and showing low ceilings and, you know, not showing the upside that you really want at the position. So it just feels like with him, as rough around the edges as he is right now, there is ability there. He, you know, he's come off really well on interviews. He tested really well. I mean, he ran a 4.45. I mean, that's impressive. You know, that, I mean, teams aren't going to sleep on that, the fact that he has that kind of speed as well. And we knew he was a good athlete functionally, but I think he's also shown the ability to be a guy that can make plays with his legs. And so there's just way more to worry about with Tyree Jackson. He can make tough throws. He isn't consistent, and he has to get sharper from the neck up. There's still obviously plenty to work on, but I think he could sneak into round three just based on the upside factor. And the, you know, team calls it a good risk, and if in 2 or 3 years it doesn't really pan out for them, you know, it doesn't really pan out, and you move on. But I think at that position, given how valuable it is, some team is going to feel like he's worth the risk, given the intangibles, how he's presented himself, and the fact that he does have just great tools. I think some team may be willing to take that risk at the end of round three.
What's going to happen with Kyler Murray? He didn't throw at the combine. He's got his pro day coming up in mid-March. What does he have to do? What does he have to do to impress anybody going forward? Do they see him on film and they love him and they just want to make sure he was 5'10"? What else does he need to do?
Yeah, I mean, this is as bizarre a story before the draft as I can remember. I mean, just the whole, you know, he wouldn't stay during the interviews with the media. Is he committed to football or baseball? Then, obviously, he's going to come out and say he's committed to football. I mean, he's going to participate in the combine. Otherwise, you have no traction at all. So, looks like he's pursuing football right now. And, I mean, Gruden, for one, said he believes him and thinks that he is going to pursue football. We'll see if he can convince teams across the board. I mean, it's a fascinating situation for so many reasons. But, number one, because there just aren't that many good quarterbacks in this class. So he really could have hit the jackpot in a perfect year for him. Because last year's class, I mean, I don't know how high he's going. Like, that was considered a really, really strong quarterback class. But this year's class, you know, there are obvious concerns with Dwayne Haskins. He's just not a very aggressive passer. At least with Kyler Murray, you're talking about a 4-3 speed guy. He can make plays with his legs. He has a great arm. He makes high-degree difficulty throws. He's got to get way better from the neck up. I mean, he's not ready to be an impact player right now or anything. But at the same time, there's a ceiling with him that gets you excited that you just don't see with some of the other top guys in the class. And I don't, that might be enough in the end to honestly push him up boards and make him the top quarterback selected. So that's going to be the most fascinating part of the draft process. It is the Kyler Murray draft. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He really has an opportunity, I think, to show out and do some things. But, again, you know, not throwing at the combine and not choosing to do anything there, you know, it, in some ways you can say, well, good move, because the rest of the quarterbacks kind of bury themselves a little bit in that process. But then also in the same breath, you know, you've got the fact that this is a guy that needs to show teams he's ready to compete and he wants to compete. And football means a lot to him, and he's been working at it. And he didn't really show teams those things. So there will probably be mixed reviews on that part for Kyler Murray, but – at the end of the day, if I'm guessing right now, I do think he'll be the first quarterback off the board. I think whatever team takes him will have some foreboding about it. You know, there's certainly a path to which it really comes back to bite you, but I think teams are going to consider his upside worth the risk.
John, one more position group to ask you about, and the Bills have a need at tight end, and it seemed like Saturday morning was a pretty good day overall for the tight end group, I thought, huh?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think one of the big takeaways is that the small school guys kind of really proved that they belong in the conversation with some of the top guys. You know, you guys like Isaac Nauta really struggling with the testing and kind of falling out of the range many expected him to be, maybe even in the second round. You know, I think we'll see him sometime day three now. You had Zach Gentry, you had Caden Smith. Some of the guys that are talked about as top tight ends kind of fall out of it. I mean, those guys ran in the 4.9. There isn't a lot of data that supports drafting a tight end that's that slow in the 4.9s, and they all had concerns on tape, to be honest. So I think that, you know, that athletic profile kind of puts those guys firmly in the day three category, where, you know, and Jay Sternberger even didn't wow. You know, he was okay across the board, but he didn't wow anybody. And I thought other guys, you know, smaller school guys like Halle Waring from San Diego State, who does have good tape when he's targeted, I thought he showed a lot of athleticism and upside. No, I thought even Foster Moreau, an LSU guy, you know, I thought he showed a ton of athleticism. And I've said for a while that LSU didn't really use him to the fullest of his ability, and I think he will get that chance in the NFL. And, you know, Utah State, Dax Raymond, proved his athleticism. San Jose State, Josh Oliver, You know, those guys have good tape and good athleticism, and they're physical. They get after people. So I think some of the small school guys in the tight end group could honestly be better than some of the bigger names that we've talked about all year long. And I kind of had them graded in the same group all lumped together, and I think the testing really broke them up, and I'm going to be moving some of those small school guys up the board while some of the bigger names might slide a little bit.
Do you think Noah Fant, the junior out of Iowa, he's 6'4", 232. I mean, he seems to be the highest rated guy around. And he's, is he, are any of these guys a guy that's going to walk in? I mean, I know they're not like top day, day one, top 10 picks. They didn't have that kind of production. But is that a reflection of college football more than it is their ability?
I mean, I think with Hawkinson and Fant, to me, you're talking about, and I only have a handful of first-round grades in this class, but those are two of them. I mean, I don't know what else you would really want in the tight end position outside of those guys, you know, because you talk about production concerns, and some of these guys have that, but not the Iowa guys. I mean, Hawkinson, great production this past season at Iowa. You know, did they throw him the ball enough? I mean, you can argue that certainly in that offense. You know, they're getting the ball every other play, but when he got chances, just made plays consistently, you know, caught everything thrown to him, terrific route runner, terrific blocker. So there's just a lot to really get excited about and like with T.J. Hawkinson. To me, he's the best tight end in the class, and I think he's very pro-ready, will translate quickly to the league. He tested great across the board. I also think Fant tested really, really well across. I mean, obviously, Fant was an elite athlete going in. Everybody knew that. He's not as polished as Hawkinson. We are still talking about a really good player who does a lot for your team and can really help you right away, I think, as an offensive receiving weapon. And he's a way better blocker than he gets advertised for as well. So to me, those are two of the top three weapons in the class, you know, along with Metcalf. I think all those guys should be early picks. You know, obviously, tight end, you have to take the positional value into account in your offense. And each offense is going to be different with the way they use that position. Is it valuable enough to them to take it that high? But I think those guys can be dynamic playmakers for a team in the NFL.
John Ledyard is senior draft analyst, COO at the Draft Network. John, I checked out your website over the weekend when we got you lined up for the show. I got to tell you, it is the best draft website I've ever come across. And I love the the interactivity of it. Fans can log on and create their own mock draft, their own big board. It's pretty amazing how interactive it is and how much fun it can be to look at your website right now.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate it. Our thought process when we launched back in the beginning of August was basically like, how do we make the draft even more fun and interactive for fans than it already is? Because everybody loves it. I mean, it's a growing phenomenon every year. And so we put kind of the plans into place to build Mock Draft Machine and build your own big board. And they've really come to fruition just this past week. I think those have been live for a week now. And people have just, I mean, the response has blown our minds. We knew it would be big, but the fact that people have this thirst for the NFL draft, you know, is so cool this time of year and so much fun. So we've been really excited by it and really appreciate you saying that you've enjoyed it as well.
It is great, thedraftnetwork.com. Hey, John, thanks. Good to talk to you. Maybe we'll talk again before over the next 7 weeks here, huh?
Absolutely. Sounds great, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.